This is episode 002 of the 54 Fly Fishing Podcast. Let's go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the 54 Fly Fishing Podcast, the fly fishing podcast for basically the everyday angler. If you're new, my name is Michael, and in today's episode, I'm kind of in a transition period at the moment where I'm starting school and the summer's over. So I thought it would be a great idea for today's episode if we kind of did a summer recap. But before we get into this week's episode, if you want to check out anything new to do with 54 North Outdoors, you can check out our website at www.54northoutdoors. And there we have photos, videos, the last episode of the podcast, which was do-it-yourself trips. And we'll have a bunch of other stuff that you can take a look at. But if you want to check that out, it's at www.54northoutdoors.com. All right, so without further ado, let's get into how my summer went and what kind of fishing trips went into my summer from beginning to end. Now, this summer, it was a bit different for me. The last two summers prior to this one, I was working as a fly fishing guide in the central interior of British Columbia, and I didn't really have a lot of time off to go on longer trips. We only had a day off a week, so I was kind of really limited to fishing around the area. But this year, I made a switch. I was working as a forestry engineer, doing block layout, and it allowed me a lot more freedom to be able to travel around the province and do some fishing because, like, we'd be doing camp work. We'd have 10 days on, 4 days off, or 5 and 2, or even a 14-7. I never got to that, but either way, it gave me a lot more time to get around the province, and I didn't really start my big trips until around July, because that's when a lot of the rivers open. I'm not the greatest or the most eager to fly fish on lakes, but I thought it'd be a good idea to definitely do a lot bigger trips with the time that I had. So one of the first trips that I got into was actually a solo trip out to Kitimat, British Columbia to try and catch a spring salmon on the fly. A couple years ago, I bought a 14-foot TFO Deer Creek spey rod, 9-10 weight, and this rod was mainly going to be my spring rod. It was only going to be for springs. I'd use it other times, but that is what that rod was for. And up until this trip, I never really targeted springs. And I actually, coming from Terrace, it's a bit surprising because I lived there for so long, but I've actually never caught one. So I thought it'd be a good idea to take. I think I was only there for about 2.5 days. But I thought it'd be a great idea to try and get a spring on the fly. So after I was done my shift at work, I loaded up the car, got everything I needed, and I made the drive to Kitimat, which is about a 7.5-8 hour drive. And when I got there, I wouldn't say busy, but currently at the time, Kitimat was the only place basically in the Skeena region where you could retain salmon. Everything else was closed to fishing at the time. And the Kitimat, because it is hatchery enhanced, they had opened a season for Chinook salmon. And pretty much everyone from around kind of flocked to the area. I remember stopping at Oscar's in Smithers to get my salmon tag and some more hooks, and I was talking to some of the people that work there, and they were telling me that all their friends are going to Kitimat on the weekend, and this kind of made me a little uneasy, because one thing that I hate is I hate having crowds, and I knew that with all the people there, it was going to make it a little bit more difficult to fish. But once I got there, it actually wasn't as busy as I thought. One good thing about the Kitimat is you're not allowed jet boats on it. The only ways you can fish it is either by hiking in or by floating it. And that was my plan. One day we were going to kind of just explore around, hike into a couple spots, and then the other day was going to be all floating. So when I arrived in Kitimat, the first thing I did was I took care of my accommodations of where I was going to be staying, and that was actually in Radley Park, which is a campground right in downtown Kitimat on the Kitimat River. And it's a great facility. I would highly recommend going there, but the only thing is it's non-reservable. You can't reserve any of the campsites, so it's first come, first serve. So I made sure I wanted to get there first, just in case that if it was close to filling up, I'd definitely have a spot. But once I got there, there was actually tons of campsites available, and I got set up relatively quickly because I wanted to get on the water really fast, and I wasn't really sure. I haven't fished the Kitimat too much as opposed to the waters in and around Terrace. And there's actually a really nice run right out in front of Radley Park, just below the bridge that crosses over the Kitimat there. And I fished that right up until pretty much 9 p.m., went in for a late dinner and got an early to bed because the next day would be the day when I would be floating. When I woke up, got up pretty early, and because I'm floating, I'm starting at a point way up on the river, and then I'm going to be just coming right back to my campsite. And that was the great thing about Radley Park, but the one thing is I had two ideas in my head when I was coming out. The one was going to be I was going to bring a bicycle, I was going to deflate my boat, pack everything on a backpack, and bike all the way to my put-in spot. But the thing about that was the put-in spot was about, I think, like 10 kilometers away by the roads to where I wanted to start. But the good thing was it was cheap. I actually opted for going with a taxi service in Kitimat and got in the taxi, took the taxi all the way up. It cost a fair bit of money. It was $30 for the fare with a $5 tip. That's $35, but I'm kind of lazy sometimes, and it really helped out with the time I would be wasting, because it would have taken me an hour and a half to bike all the way there with all my gear, get it together. I would have been fishing a lot later. So once I was on the water, we started our float, and first part of the float was really froggy water, not the best, but then I got into the main flow of the Kitimat, and we passed a bunch of guide boats and a lot of other guys. I talked to him a bit, but didn't really get into my first and only fish of the trip until around 1 o'clock in the day, just past the where the power lines go across, if you know the area. And I was fishing on a island in the middle of the river, really small island. And I was just fishing there, thought it looked good, and then I saw a spring bust just downstream of me, and swung my fly through once, no takes, another time, no takes, and on the third time, had a pull, set the hook, fish was on. The one hard thing about that was, because I was on an island, and because I'm floating, I can't really chase it that well. If I had to chase it, it would have been a whole rigmarole to get in my boat, get everything ready, float down, try and paddle at the same time while fighting the fish, and I probably would have lost it. But I kept the fish in the current in the main river. I kept it in the current, didn't run that far from me, and eventually I landed it, and it was a nice 13-14 pound spring salmon, nice and chrome, and that would have been the one that I took home for the day. Floated down a bit more, saw a lot of more salmon come up, but definitely, if I did it again, one of the things I would have done is I would have probably had a bit heavier sink tip on. I don't think I was getting down as far as I needed to. And the second thing is I probably would have brought along a jig rod, because just looking at Instagram and stuff like that, a lot of the fish that the guys were pulling out, especially the bigger fish, were being caught on jig rods. But I definitely wanted to get that checked off my bucket list to catch one on the spey rod. So after that pretty much ended day two of fishing, doing my float trip, and, you know, got back, Tried fishing out in front a little bit more, didn't catch anything. A funny story with that actually was I was fishing, pretty much had the whole bar to myself, and a young kid with his dad are coming down. Immediately I knew they weren't from the area, and out of the whole bar, he pretty much just plopped himself right next to me within maybe 5 meters and just started casting. And, you know, usually it's not really good river etiquette, but I already was pretty much fished out for the day, and, you know, I just let him keep going down. I moved down. But other than that, you know, went back in, had dinner, and got a good night's sleep with the plan the next day to, I was going to fish the tides. I was going to head down closer to the ocean and get there right as high tide was at its highest, and all those fish that were waiting at the mouth of the river going to get pushed in. And hopefully I'd be able to intercept them. So I headed out there in the morning. I was planning on fishing till around around noon. And then I was going to be heading back to Prince George and didn't get any bites. Actually, the only fish that I caught was I caught a dolly in the maybe the first half an hour. And other than that, I only saw one other group of guys catch a fish there. So definitely either they just weren't biting that day, or a lot of fish weren't pushed up the river then. So I got everything packed up, and I headed back into Terrace. I visited with some personal friends, and then I was back on the road to Prince George. So once I got home back to Prince George, I was back to work. I was doing five and twos for pretty much the entire month of July. And those 2 days, it's not really big enough to go somewhere far, but I actually managed to squeeze in a bunch of local trips kind of within 4 hours of Prince George. And one of those actually of that was my favorite was doing a trip trying to catch some really nice aggressive bull trout, and it paid off pretty well for me. I headed out of Prince George and I went to a favorite spot that I always go to, and I began hiking, casting a big streamer into pools and pulling it back. And it actually took me quite a while until I had my first one come after it and hooked him, got some nice pictures. If you want to check out those pictures, they're on, you can check out my personal Instagram, which is Mike R. Leong, or you can also check out the photography section on the webpage, and you'll be able to see some of them there. But I actually had a pretty good day. I think I had about maybe just over 10 in total for the entire day. But one of the coolest parts about that day was I actually did a bit of sight fishing for them. I came up to a run, which I personally named Smuggler's Run because that's just what I wanted to call it. And as I was casting, I would be watching my white streamer swing through the current, and as it was swinging, I'd see a bull just sitting in the current, so I'd just pull it by his face, and they'd bite pretty much every time. I actually got my personal best bull trout. It was about 30 inches on the fly that day, and you know, I was pretty happy. It was one of the best solo kind of day trip days that I've had for the entire summer, and I fished that whole entire day out. I tried other spots, but nothing really compared to fishing that one run. I think I got like 7 fish out of it, 7 really nice bull trout. So that was definitely one of the best day trips that I had by myself by far. So after that trip, it was back to work again for another 5 days. And eventually towards the end of the month, I got pretty lucky. Myself and my girlfriend's schedules kind of linked up to where we could see each other. And she came up and we actually had a really good weekend. We did camping, we did a bit of fishing. And the first day we went up north because we really wanted to go back to a river that we fished the year before. And we actually had a really good day. But it was the weekend and I thought it was going to be a bit busier, so we tried somewhere new this time, and that was on the Table River in northern British Columbia. It's about a 2-hour drive from Prince George if you're going a bit slower, and we were mainly looking to catch some Arctic grayling, and we got to this we kind of went to the easy access spot on the river. There's not a lot of easy access, but we hiked down and we fished our way up, and we actually got a couple nice grayling. Not super big numbers, but it was a nice day, like 27 degrees out, nice water, nice and cold, and all of our grayling that we got were on dry flies. I got a bull. My girlfriend, she hooked into a bull trout as well, but she ended up losing it. And no, overall, it was just a really good day. And we actually had one of the most perfect camp spots on Tichita Lake. It was quiet. There wasn't a lot of people. The only real noise that there was the occasional truck going by. But we had amazing weather, went for a swim, had a great dinner. And then the next day, we got up and we were going to go to the Anzac River, which was the river that we had a lot of fun on earlier, but it wasn't as good as what it used to be, what it was the year before. I think it was because we went on the Monday and it kind of got maybe fished out a bit on the weekend. The fish were kind of feeling the effects of being caught, and it was, yeah, the water, and one thing about the water there, too, is it was way higher than what we were used to last year. Last year, we were hiking upstream, crossing back and forth across the river with no real problems, but this year, I looked at it, and I'm pretty sketchy with where I'll cross rivers, and this was a time where I was like, yeah, I'm definitely going to probably get swept downstream, so we actually left a bit earlier, and my plan was on the way back, we were going to hit a river and hopefully catch a couple smaller rainbows on dry flies. And it actually turned into not a lot of rainbows being caught, but it was definitely one of the more memorable fishing kind of areas that I had, because we were catching like fish at our feet, not very far. And the fly that was working was actually a lead fly. We took basically any old fly and took a piece of split shot slit down to the bottom, and I don't know why fish like it so much, but they would keep eating it, needing it right at our feet, so we caught way too many fish to count there, and it really capped off a great visit for her to come up. And after that, stuck her back on the plane, and I was back to work again for another shift. So during this next work shift, I knew that because it was a 10-day shift, I'd have a 4-day weekend to look forward to after it was over. And I was talking to a friend, and we had been planning on going out west into the Chilcotin to do a little bit of dry fly fishing for rainbows. And it actually materialized really well. So after I was done my shift, got everything ready, I drove down to Williams Lake, we loaded up the boat, and we headed out pretty much into the middle of nowhere. And I had never been pretty much anywhere further west of Williams Lake, going out the Chilcotin Highway towards Bella Coola, but it's hilarious. It's pretty desolate for sure. You go over top of the hill out of Williams Lake, and then service cuts out, turns pretty much into a flat plain. And one thing that I really noticed was kind of the fires from the year before. There was burn everywhere, and I was used to seeing burn from working earlier in the summer, but there was a lot of burn out there. And we stopped for gas on a couple of on a reserve, and then kept our going into the unknown, and then eventually we saw the mountains and we were getting close, and we stopped, got our camp set up, and launched the boat. And this is where we would be fishing for the next 2-3 days. Now, the beauty about this trip was there wasn't a lot of guesswork into it. We were going to fish this area one way. We had our boat, we had a motor, we would drift from point A down to point B, fish all the way down with dry flies, turn around, and go back up to the top and do it all again. So knowing that, definitely the one thing we wanted to do was we wanted to figure out a pattern that worked. And the friend that I went with, he basically said, Bring stimulators. And me, myself, I am a budding fly tier, but I'm not the best. So instead of a stimulator, I tied Tom Thumbs. Basically, they're both attractor patterns. They don't really look like anything, but we're really trying to imitate stoneflies, big stoneflies, actually. And the first day we went out, we looked at the weather. This is kind of rewinding to before I left. And I looked at the weather and I was like, hot, 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 little bit of cloud. I don't need rain gear. It turned out when we got there the first day, it was nice when we got there, but then it poured and it was windy and it was cold. So we went out, fished for a bit, turned right around, went back to camp, kind of sat in the truck with the heat on for a bit, and then just tried to wait out the storm. We put a tarp up over our picnic table, and it was definitely a funny way to spend the first little bit of the fishing trip. But eventually the clouds would clear, and it actually took a really long time. We didn't get fishing again until the evening, but we went out. I personally didn't catch anything. My buddy Cam, he hooked into a nice trout on the first night, but other than that, we just went to bed. We knew the next day we're just going to have a full day of fishing, and we got up, had a nice breakfast, and then got out on the water, and it wasn't, in his words, because he's been there a lot of times before, it wasn't like an A-plus day, but we're definitely seeing a bigger average of fish for what we were catching. Like, the numbers weren't where they normally are, but we were catching fish that were definitely bigger compared to what he's used to, and we actually got into a few really nice fish, rainbows in like that 16, 17, 18 inch range, just munching on stoneflies, and it was actually really fun. We kind of fished it a bit differently because he was used to fishing this one area, but same kind of problem that I had in the Anzac, the water was a lot higher because we would look at the mountainside and you would look at just the face of the mountain and there was no snow on it. And he was telling me that the other times he was here, same time of year, there would be snow on the mountain. So it all melted and it was coming down that river and it made the water a lot higher. So it made the fishing a bit different to what he's used to, but we still managed to get into a lot of fish. And one time we decided to go into this little off jet, see if we could, we were going to try and catch a bull trout. We're still trying to find his first big bull trout. He's been catching a lot of small ones, but he wants to get a nice big one. So we went looking for that. And we crested over this drop-off, and I just see this big, giant black fish sitting there. And immediately my mind clicks, bull trout. But in hindsight, it was most likely a Chinook salmon that was making its way up. But we put a streamer down right in front of its face. I pretty much just ran it right along its back, and it wasn't interested. So that kind of solidified in my mind that it was probably a salmon, because bull trout, beginning of August, it's most likely gonna chase that thing down unless it was like recently hooked within that day, a half a day at that. It would have definitely munched on that thing. So we just kept fishing dries for the rest of the trip, and then the next day we went out for a little bit and then headed back across the plains in the Chilcotin, and then I headed back again for another little bit of work. Now, this little bit of work actually turned out to be another 10-day shift, and once that 10-day shift was over, you know, I have the 4 days again to work with, and during that shift, the Skeena watershed actually reopened to retention of salmon. You were allowed to keep sockeye, coho, pinks, and I talked to my dad. My dad really wanted to go salmon fishing, so we left the day after I got back. I think I actually had 1 day to work with, but we headed down there for about pretty much 2 full days of fishing, a half day, a full day, and another half. And we got to Terrace. We stayed at a hotel this time, so I was definitely not camping. I was in a hotel. I was comfortable. And one thing that I knew before we went was the spot that I went to before, I was like, oh man, we're going to catch so many fish. Like, Dad, you're going to have an amazing time. But the reality of it was when we got there, apparently it hadn't rained in Terrace for about 30 days before we got there, and the Skeena was low. Like, I mean, I have never in my life seen it this low. It was low, it was clear, and it pretty much turned what I wanted, what I had in my head. It flipped it upside down. The spot we were going to, we were fishing the inflow of a creek, and the last year you were able to actually swing a fly there. This year, you couldn't. You could swing a fly, maybe you couldn't even swing it. You could cast it out in the current, you could bring it back. And that first day, we went to that spot thinking that the fish were going to be there, and they just weren't. I got one fish pulling a spoon back through the current, but that was the only fish that we got that day. And my dad, who is learning to spey fish a bit more and more each year, he really wanted to catch a fish on the spey. He didn't want to throw spoons or anything, and you couldn't really do it at this one spot. So later that day, we moved and got to a bar where we could swing flies through, and we actually only had that one fish for the first day. After that, we went out to dinner and went to some old restaurants that I went to as a kid, drove by the old house, and then we got up early the next day with the sole intention of fishing for the entire day. And it's kind of hard to do that when it's so hot out. It was 30 plus degrees that day. Luckily, there was a little bit of wind to kind of bring that temperature down, but it was still like really hot. And I met up with the personal friend that I went and visited in Terrace when I was doing my Kitimat trip, and he came out in the morning, fished a little bit before he had some other business to take care of, and I managed to actually hook a couple coho. I lost one early, and then I brought one to shore, but it was definitely a smaller coho than the year before. But at that point, we wanted to bring some salmon home to put in the freezer. So we kept that one, and we just kept fishing throughout the day. I hooked another one about a little bit smaller. And the one thing about coho fishing is you're allowed to keep four, but only two of them can be over 50 centimeters. If you catch another two that are under the jacks, you can keep four, but basically they're pretty tough to catch, the smaller ones, so you're really only limited to two. And the second one I caught, I think it ended up being like 57 centimeters, so it was just over the bubble. So that was pretty much my two coho for the day, and we kept fishing a bit more. I changed my tactics up a bit every so often, tried to floss some sockeye. That didn't really work out. And next, the next fish that I caught was actually a really nice coho in the, just kind of in the, about the 14, 15 pound range. And it was kind of depressing when you caught it because, I wouldn't say depressing, that's kind of a bad way to put it, but it was definitely the kind of fish that you would want to take home with you. It was a nice size one. It'd be great for feeding the rest of my family. And we let it go. We grabbed some pictures, so we have that. But the one thing that didn't really go well was fishing for my dad, which was kind of unfortunate. He's getting a bit older, and the rocks and Terrace are really round, really slick, and walking out into the river is kind of hard. And with the water as low as it was, you could pretty much walk a third out into the river and you'd be at the same depth, which for me, it was about just above my knees. And for him, if he wanted to walk out as far as I could, it would be a little dangerous and it would take him a lot of time. So he was fishing a lot closer to shore, and he just wasn't getting his line far enough out to get to the fish. So he actually didn't get a bite for the entire trip, which was Unfortunate, definitely, but if the waters are that low the next time we go, we're gonna switch it up and try something a bit different. But after that day, once again, we went out to dinner, and that was a definite plus of having my dad there, not only for the company, but we got to eat out, which was a lot nicer than eating spaghetti or macaroni or ramen noodles. But we got to sleep, woke up the next day, went back to that same bar, tried to catch our last couple coho for the trip, and then we were going to head home back on the highway at around noonish again. And I managed to hook one fish for the entire day, and I actually hooked it right in the dorsal fin. So even if I landed it, we would have had to let it go. But I snagged it on the top and pretty much lost it just before it was going to get right before it got to shore. So no harm, no foul. It would have got off. And then just as we were leaving, a big group of about five anglers came, and they were fishing in the riffles, and they caught a couple fish. So I think next time, if water levels are the same, I definitely want to try in those riffles, see if you can floss a couple sockeye. But I like coho fishing because I like that they chase your fly down. And I think that's really exciting when you get a nice hard take rather than just putting the line through the fish's mouth and then hooking it. So, you know, we had three coho to take home. So we drove back, got those all vacuum sealed and put in the freezer. And after that, I had one last work stint to go through. And then I decided after that I was going to be done for the summer and finish off my summer visiting my girlfriend in Vancouver and just having a good time. And I was actually going to try and catch something while she was, because she had to work during my visit. But when I had that time where she was working, I was trying to catch a sturgeon in the tidal section of the Fraser River. So sturgeon fishing, it was a learning experience. It was different than what I'm used to. I had bought a sturgeon rod 2 years ago when I was working in and around the 100 Mile House, and I only went once. I didn't have any bites, and this time I went into it again thinking that I was going to catch a lot of sturgeon, a lot of big sturgeon, and I think that's what definitely shot myself in the foot. I can't do that. I gotta stop doing that where I expect the best, because then if I don't do so well, I feel disappointed. But all in all, it was a good learning experience. It all started, I went to Barry's Bait in Richmond, and I talked to a really nice guy at the counter there, and I was gonna buy pretty much a lamprey from them, use that as bait, but he suggested, with all the salmon coming through, to actually just go down to Stevenson and buy a whole sockeye salmon, which was pretty much a better idea than what I was doing. So I went down, bought a sockeye from a lady off the docks there, and I was going to use that as bait, just cut it into chunks and chuck it out. And the first day, tried a spot, chucked it out. No, pretty much, I think I might have had a bite. It could have also been a pike minnow biting it or some other fish biting it, but it definitely wasn't a big bite like that you would expect, that you see in videos of a sturgeon. And another really neat thing, I've never fished such a tidal zone where the water was so influenced. I got there at around 10:30 a.m., and high tide was at 8:30 a.m. So I was 2 hours, and it didn't seem like the water went down that much. But in between like the 10:30 and high tide or low tide, which would have been at, I think it came, low tide was around 2 o'clock that day, the water just like went down like crazy amounts. And the interesting thing about that river, if it's not the typical shape that you would think out of a river where you have shallow banks and eventually just kind of goes down into a trough and then you're at the deep point. It goes out and then all of a sudden it's just I don't know if it's clay or silt, or it's pretty much just muddy bottom, and it just drops right off. And I didn't know how deep it was past the drop off, but it was probably in like the 30-foot range, because my rig of a railroad spike and my bait and everything, it was going down for a while until it would hit bottom. So the first day, got a couple nibbles from something, and unfortunately the same thing happened for the next day. I got there a lot earlier because I didn't have to get bait, and just pretty much I sat there for 6 hours, pretty much seven hours, and just waited, changed out my bait every so often. I got stung by a bumblebee that was coming around my salmon. He got caught under my arm. That's the first time I've been stung in a while, so maybe that was kind of an omen of how the trip was going to go. But on the third day, this was the closest that I got to hooking a sturgeon. Same thing. I was kind of a little bit not as motivated as I was at the very start. I was expecting a lot of the same of maybe not catching anything. In hindsight, I probably shouldn't have moved spots, but I knew that there was fish there probably. And there was salmon going around, so eventually, if I put in the time, there would have been a sturgeon there. And I think I'm 95% sure that's what happened, because I had my rod down kind of at around 11 o'clock, kind of in that mid, in between high tide and low tide. And all of a sudden, my reel just started screaming off, because I have a an Avet JX. I can't remember what model it is, but it has a bait setting. So I would have it on bait setting most of the time. So if anything wanted to take the line and just pull it, it could just go. And that's what happened. I was sitting there, and all of a sudden my line just started screaming out, and I wasn't used to this. I'm pretty sure I did everything right, but sometimes it just doesn't work out for you. I grabbed the rod as the line was going out, and I set it to set on the reel, and I watched my line bend down, take the weight, and I was just gonna pretty much let the sturgeon, if that's what it was, I was gonna let it set itself. But probably in hindsight, I probably should have set it, really reefed into it at that point, but I was gonna let it set itself. I let the tension build up, and then I just felt it come right out of its mouth, and that was pretty much it for my entire fishing trip. It's definitely something I'm going to have to go back and try again. And probably if there's a lot of things I would have done better, but now that I've done it this way, I know for future times what I can do differently. And the good thing about down there is you can fish sturgeon all year round, but I was definitely there during one of the best times. The only time I can think of being a bit better would be during the Ulican run. But yeah, that's the way fishing goes. So after that, during actually that whole thing, that led right into my last trip before school got started here. And I was texting a friend. He was driving pretty much almost all the way across Canada, from Ontario, because he goes to school with me in Prince George, and he is a competitive bass angler back in Ontario. And I sent him a message. I said, "What are you doing on your way back?" And he's like, "Oh, just drive. I'll be in Prince George on September 1st. And I told him, "You want to make a detour?" And he said, "Yes." And he knew exactly where we were going, and we were going to head to Penticton, do a little bit of bass fishing on Vaso Lake, which is, I personally think it's one of, it's a great lake, but it's definitely a tough lake to fish because you're not allowed motors. It's paddling only. And that really deters a lot of people. There's a lot more kayakers on there, but there are some people that go out there and fish. So I said goodbye to my girlfriend, and I drove into Penticton. I met Dean there at about, I'd say we met up at around 4, and we didn't get to fishing that evening till about 6. We just fished from the shore, and kind of how my luck was going with fishing for the last week or so, I didn't catch anything that first night. Dean caught a really big pike minnow, which I got a kick out. He was really excited about it, but no bass for that first night. And the whole plan the next day was we were going to borrow where we were staying. We were staying at a family friend, and they had an aluminum boat that they allowed me to borrow. So we were going to take that, row around, kind of check out the lake, try and catch some fish. And yeah, we just hit the hay and got to it the next day. The thing about, though, the fishing the next day was that with fishing lakes, I get really into a pattern. If I catch fish one way, I feel like it's still going to work. And depending on the time of year, that is 100% not the case. And that's what happened here. We went out and I always caught smallmouth on this one nice shoal. And we did catch a couple there, but I think the one time I went in April, about a year and a half ago, I went in April and I actually caught some really nice smallmouth fishing. Like if I was fishing for trout in April, fishing chronomids and leeches under an indicator, and that worked really well. I knew that really wasn't going to work now because the weeds are going to be a lot higher. But in years past, I had fished Senkos and soft plastic lures right out in front of there, and I would do really well. But once again, that was in July or end of May, and the time difference with bass, I'm not a bass fisherman, but there's definite ways to do it, and that for you doing those techniques didn't really work out for me. So that next day, we spent the entire day pretty much chasing fish not where they were, and I felt kind of bad because once again I built this lake up for Dean. I said we're gonna catch some fish. Hopefully we can like get a largemouth around 5 pounds. And the first day it just didn't happen. We paddled around. We didn't see a lot of fish. We caught a couple. Like we caught some pretty small bass. Like maybe the biggest was around the 12-inch mark, but not like I had seen before. Like I've pulled a 7-pound largemouth out of there, a 5-pound largemouth, and I think those were just luck. For the 5-pounder, I caught it on a crankbait fishing rock, and the 7-pounder I got just hucking a spinnerbait across the flat, and I just lucked into it. But the good thing was the next day we were like, okay, this is our last day. Let's fish hard, and then we'll head back the next day. Because we could have fished the day after this one, but we decided, you know, it's like the fishing's not that great, and we wanted to get back into Prince George, get ready for school, which was starting on the Wednesday. So if we had fished that day, we would have been driving back on the Tuesday, and this gave us an entire day to get ready. But the good thing was we went and checked out a entirely new part of the lake that I had never fished, and we actually found out a pretty good pattern. Unfortunately, I didn't bring my fly rods on this trip. I didn't use them. One thing that I really like about bass fishing is using gear for bass, because it's too much fun to throw Pauvers, crankbaits, stuff like that, and you can really set into a bass really hard, and it's just something I find enjoyable. So we went up to the northern part of the lake, and then we got into this one section where there was overhanging trees. It was really shallow, though, and it was hot that day as well. And one thing that I did was I threw a soft plastic right up against the shore, and then all of a sudden my line's going out sideways, and I was kind of surprised because it'd been a while since we caught a fish, and I tried to set it, and eventually it just popped out of the fish's mouth. So we kind of had a pattern that the fish were hiding out of the sun. They were under the the overhang cover. So we tried that a bit more, and I actually lost another nice fish pretty much the same way I lost the first one. But we caught a lot. Dean caught a lot of fish actually using a wacky rig Senko, and he was just fishing that around cover and in the deep spots, and he caught a lot of smaller fish. But our real success came when we were fishing up, and we were fishing where the Okanagan River flows into the lake, and that created a bunch of channels of sandy bottom with weeds on the side, and pretty much we would just target those sandy patches, and then almost every time there'd be a smallmouth in them. And this was probably the most fun that I've had bass fishing there, because I was just throwing a popper into them, popping it a couple times, and a smallmouth would pretty much launch itself out of the water to eat it. And I found that to be really fun. Dean got a bunch on the on his soft plastic. I got a couple more on the soft plastic, but we definitely found a pattern that in late summer that they're kind of trying to find those areas where they can get out of the heat. So if I did it again, I'm probably not going to go back and fish that lake after July. Like May, June, I think is the best, and that's where you can have the most fun with it. But if I was there again, I would definitely look for finding bass in a little more cover so they can get away from the heat. But after that, we were pretty much done for that trip. We had school coming up, so we convoyed from Penticton back to Prince George, and before I knew it, I was back in the classroom. I'm taking an aquatic plants class, a wildlife class, a fisheries class, and a populations class, and I'm pretty much back into the full swing of it. Right now, we're kind of just gearing up for school. I'm going to hit that midterm busy level pretty quick, but right now, it's pretty tame. I've got a couple trips planned for the next couple weeks going into probably about the first week of October. So definitely excited to tell you guys about that as they happen. But yeah, other than that, that was pretty much my entire summer. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take some of the photos from pretty much every little bit of this entire summer, all the stuff that I discussed. I'm going to take some of the photos and I'll put them in the show notes for this episode. And if you want to find the show notes for episode 2, it's going to be at www.54northoutdoors.com/recap. You'll be able to find the show notes there. And one thing I also want to ask from you as well is if you're a listener and you're listening on either Google Play or the iTunes Store, definitely give this a subscribe if you liked it, and also give it a rating. It'll definitely help put my podcast out to more people if it's rated. It'll be in front of a few more eyes, so I would really appreciate it if you gave it a rating. And put a comment, you know, be completely honest. Tell me what I need to work on. Tell me what you like. And that'll pretty much do it for me. Once again, my name is Michael from 54 North Outdoors, and you have been listening to the 54 Fly Fishing Podcast, the podcast for your everyday average angler, and I will catch you on the next episode.